also have an apology from Honorable Swart and Honorable Mulaoke, they were oversight. Those are the only apologies we have. I think that the ISP might be joining us late. So the agenda was circulated, it's before us. We'll start with the consideration of the draft program on the appointment of the Deputy Public Protector. We, as we discussed yesterday, we asked that certain proposals be incorporated, especially the issue relating to the program, until we finally present the matter to the House that we want to have a clear program. So our colleagues, Mr. Sultan, Ms. Sultan, Sultan, and her team, they have done that work, and they would want to present that work so that there is a final agreement by the committee. Ms. Sultan.
I'm going to ask Steele Benai to present.
Good morning, members. As of yesterday's meeting, we were requested as a secretariat to come up with the draft program and the date outlining the process as from today. I'll quickly go through it. Which is today on the 28th of August with the consideration of this program and the consideration of the draft advert, which is before members, it's distributed. On the 29th, which is tomorrow, we planned that to create more public awareness that if the advert is agreed to by the committee today, we would ask our communication section to release a media statement on the advert and place the advert on Parliament website. And obviously, with regards to the request that was made, that the advert must also be translated to other languages that will be considered, and it will also be available. But the draft advert needs to be agreed to, which is in an English version as we speak. We, because of the time frame given now, it's Wednesday already, it will be pressing for us to push for advertisement for this weekend. So we planned that at least we, after the committees are created on the advert, we place the advert or on the following weekend, which is the 6th and the 8th weekend of September, which is next weekend. The note there says that note that the advert will be also placed in various newspapers and electronic media between these dates. On the 25th, on the 25th of September, the candidates will be contacted with the request that to fill in their questionnaire, and I think after this meeting, the questionnaire will also be distributed to members. To the committee so that the committee can agree to it, and there will be closing date on the questionnaire. And then uploading of the candidates list and their CVs in the Parliament website, the proposed closing date for public comment will be on the 16th. As you can see, members, we've tried to incorporate the 3 weeks that was suggested by members yesterday. On the week of the 21st to the 25th, the shortlisting of candidates will be happening. We suggested the Friday of that particular week, but members can decide which date, because we envisage that we will also be busy with BRRR reports in that particular week. Chances are we might have to be adopting the tribal reports, hence we propose Friday. Then on the next following week, it's the screening of the shortlisted candidates. We provided 2 weeks because we do not know specifically how many candidates will be shortlisted. And as members agreed yesterday that only shortlisted members must be screened. Yes. Then the following week will be the week of the interviews. The reason we provided 2 days for the interviews is we currently do not know the number of the shortlisted candidates, so we provided 2 days. But normally it will happen on Monday, because I remember with the previous appointment of the previous of the current public protector, the committee set till 3 a.m. in the morning, making sure that they take 1 day dealing with the interviews. Then the following week will be deliberations, then we report to the House. That's the draft proposal that the Secretary came with. Thank you.
It will be important that we also, when we consider this, we also look at the advert, because that advert is part of the process. Honorable members, this is the proposed program. Welcome, Honorable
Thank you very much, Chair, and I just equally appreciate the committee support staff for having been quick in terms of ensuring that they execute what was said must be done yesterday. Tucha, I think it is coherent in how I see it. I would like to propose that we take it as it is. Yes, of course, noting the issues of public advertisement, which is said that must be go to all levels of media houses, in the regional, provincial, national. So we must just take note of that, Chair. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mola. Honorable Danger. Can you use your mic?
Agree with Honorable Mola, just a few points to raise. Maybe some little kind of touch-ups will need to be done in terms of this. We, much as we have said we've got this 3 months and 30 days, we know that September we have 20 days as far as any, because on the 20th we have. So everything else, so I can see here they were being asked that we need to stay behind, I don't know, or something. So just as you know, as long as you know that. So the focus really is the 20 days of September and the entire October. Because from where I'm sitting, as it is presented to us now, it is saying, if I may use my example of yesterday, if lost in my deal of CASA, is the candidate you want. We've missed that 1 month's notice already, because we'll only finish on the 20th of November. That's when the House does that. And if you pause, you can only after that to inform the candidate. So something, I'm just because the second point I want to make, it might be good to have had what you call the risk page at the end. What are the risks in this plan? So what the very first risk is that as we start, we're not meeting our target. So as we start, we're not meeting that target, given that. And then if I to go to Wednesday, 25 September, candidates are conducted with the request that they fill in questionnaire. And the proposed date for return of that questionnaire is 11 October. I certainly don't have a sense of how this questionnaire looks, but candidates of the caliber who wants to occupy that position, I don't know why they need 16 days to fill in a questionnaire. Ne? 16 days. There must be something about this questionnaire that you need 16 days to fill in. So I was going to, if there's the fat to be cut, that's an area where you cut fat in terms of days. At least a minimum, you can give 7 days, which is kind of understandable. But to go to 2 weeks plus, in my mind, doesn't make sense for somebody to fill in a questionnaire. So I'm asking that we cut the fat, because that's where we're getting days back in that. Well, I'll finish with that in terms of on a lighter note. But I'm hoping that this plan, because I was looking for a schedule more than this, which is in the form of a Gantt chart. Your critical path, you need, I'm sure the person who's going to be driving this in your own space, in your office, we know who's responsible for what, so that those things are not going to fail. But on a lighter note, 25 October, myself and Jackie are sharing a birthday. So you want us to be here. I'm not sure if I would be. So you can as well note my apology that day, just on a lighter note.
Honorable Janzi, you are not asked to be here because I think it will be administration that will be dealing most of the work during recess time. So the process will be continuing whilst we are doing our constituency work. But I think we do note the time, the 16 days for questionnaire. That we might need to look at that, and the questionnaire itself, that at some point it must serve before us so that we can look at it. Honorable Hisham Mohammed.
Thank you, Chair. No, we of course endorse this process. Just on, like, in past experiences in the advertisement, often one assumes the contact details that's there, that prospective candidates, especially those in practice and so on, are able, in whatever area, are able to get further particulars, such as, for example, the remuneration of the Deputy Public Protector. I don't know whether that's normally gazetted, but that often becomes an issue, especially with experienced people, weighing up their options in life. And I'm raising this because I know about it, that many, in my former position as provincial head of Justice Department, I would be called even for your ad. And I would say, no contact Parliament, we wouldn't know, but that's a general trend. So I assume that information will be available by the Secretary. Thanks.
That is noted. Any other? I think also some of the dates are going to be adjusted as we move. Because I don't think it will be cut in stone. They will be adjusted as we move. But I think the issue raised by Honorable Janji of the risk factors is one issue maybe that we must also engage with the Speaker. So that if it becomes clear that we will not be able to meet the deadline, that there is some form of an extension for the Deputy Public Protection Team. Everything is managed. So can I take it that we accept this draft program with all the amendments that have been made, and accepting with the view that it is a working program, it is going to be adjusted depending on how quickly and how slowly do we move. Agreed to the application, got the media, the address. Are we happy with the address? Do you still need time to go through the address, or I take it that you agree with it, or do you still need time to read the show?
Thank you, Chair. We agree with the address.
Okay. Thank you very much. No one is opposing. Thank you very much. Let's go to item number 2, a briefing on a draft promotion of access to information amendment bill. Legal services, if you can start by introducing yourself.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members. My name is Noruthando Bikasha. I am the parliamentary legal advisor.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Henk Kupria, and I'm from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. I work in our legislative drafting component. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will take the committee through the proposed amendment bill, which is called the Promotion of Access to Information Amendment Bill. This bill is a result of the court judgment. My vote comes at TC. The Minister of Justice and Correctional Services Court challenging the constitutionality of the Promotion of Access to Information Amendment Act 179.
Can you move closer to your mic?
One of the grounds that the PAIA was challenged on, it was that the PAIA is the national legislation that is envisaged by Section 32 of the Constitution to give effect to the citizen's right of access to information. But the challenge was that the PAIA has failed to do so. The case was essentially that, properly understood, Section 32 of the Constitution, read with Section 19 and 72 of the Constitution, imposes an obligation on Parliament to pass legislation that provides for the recording and disclosure of information on the private funding of political parties and independent candidates. The High Court agreed with the arguments that were brought to court by my vote count and held that PAIA's failure to provide for access to information on private political party funding and inefficiency that renders PAIA unconstitutional. The judgment of the Western Cape High Court in terms of the Constitution had to go to the Constitutional Court to be confirmed because it makes an order of constitutional invalidity. On 21 June 2018, the Constitutional Court declared PAIA invalid to the extent of its inconsistent with the Constitution because it failed to provide for the recording, preservation, and reasonable disclosure of information regarding private funding of political parties and independent candidates. Constitutional Court held that the state is under an obligation that flows from the Constitution, Section 32, Section 19, and Section 72, and that the state has to do everything possible to give reasonable access to information and to give practical meanings to the expression in the Constitution of the right to vote and the right of access to information. And the Constitutional Court orders that Parliament amend PAIA and take any other measure it deems appropriate to provide for the report of preservation and certification of access to information on private funding of political parties. And Parliament was ordered to do this within a period of 18 months. And that means Parliament should have passed a bill and the President should have assented to before the 20th of December 2019. Now, Chair, I will go straight to the bill, which was sent to the members for comments, and permission was received from the House for the committee to pass and to amend the Promotion of Access to Information Act. The bill, Chair, is a draft, and it's a policy bill. The committee is more than welcome to still make changes on the bill, delete whatever the committee is not happy with, as long as the bill will address the constitutional court order against Parliament, which is to give access to individuals to information on private funding of political parties. The bill, on page one, it gives us the long title, but just tells us what the bill intends to do. And what the bill is proposing that we do is to insert a new chapter in the Act, which is the Promotion of Access to Information Act. That chapter will be Chapter 2A, and it will be titled Publication and Availability of Certain Records of Political Parties. Clause 1 of the bill, which is proposed Section 52A in the Act, gives us definitions of terms that will be used in this chapter. It first defines an accounting officer and defines a political party. An accounting officer, the definition is aligned to the definition of an accounting officer that is found in the Political Party Funding Act, which was assented to by the President in January this year. It's not implemented yet, but it's legislation because it was assented to. The accounting officer is defined to mean a person who has been appointed by the political party to be an accounting officer. Section 9(1) of the Political Party Funding Act says that a political party must appoint a person to be their accounting officer. So that person will be given duties and responsibilities in clause 2 of the bill, which we will talk about now. And then political party is also defined to mean an entity that accepts donations principally to support or oppose any registered political party or its candidate. And it also means a party with a representation in the national or provincial legislature, and it also means an independent candidate. And then clause 2, which if we want to call it, we can call it the main part of this bill, which is what the constitutional court requires Parliament to do. Clause 52B gives certain responsibilities to an accounting officer of a political party or an accounting officer of an independent candidate. In terms of this clause, the accounting officer must create and keep records of the identity of and the amount of money paid by all persons or entities who donate more than 100,000 per financial year, as defined in Section 1 of the Political Party Funding Act. That 100,000 threshold was taken from the Political Party Funding Act. So the Act, this amendment bill when we discussed it, and bear in mind that there is a Political Party Funding Bill and that this bill should be aligned with that Act. And the Political Party Accounting Officer must also create and keep records of any money lent to the political party on commercial terms or not. Any money paid on behalf of the political party for any expense incurred directly or indirectly by that political party. The accounting officer must also create and keep records of the provision of assets, services, or facilities for the use or benefit of a political party, whether on commercial terms or not. And any sponsorship provided to the political party, including services rendered voluntarily. The accounting officer is also required to, on a quarterly basis, make the report available in the social media platforms of the political party conference. Subsection 2 of that clause requires the accounting officer of a political party to ensure that the reports that are referred to above are updated and made available on the social media platform on a political party concerned at least 2 months prior to an election of the National Assembly of Provincial Legislature, or 2 months prior to the municipal election, or 2 months before a referendum is declared and regulated by the Referendum Act. And the report referred to in the amendment bill must be kept for a period of at least 5 years after the report consent has been created. And then clause 2 of the bill just gives us the short title, which tells us what this act will be called after it has been passed, which will be the Promotion of Access to Information Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, yes, it's important to stress that the aim of the proposed amendments will be to dovetail with the provisions of the Political Party Funding Act. We have and once again, when one has the advantage of a poll being available for a while and it has matured in your head and you started thinking about these things, we have identified a few things that could be corrected. However, we would like to, at this stage, not preempt processes and wait for the committee, of course, to receive its public comments on the poll. And also then have the advantage of those additional comments before we can come up with or propose to the committee maybe what the department would think would be technically sound provisions. For example, at this stage, the poll refers to a term like the social media, which is a very wide term, and which is a term that might cause interpretive problems at some stage. So what I would like to say then is then, maybe yes, just to go one step backwards, Mr. Chair, with regard to the Constitutional Court's judgment, when the political party funding bill was considered in Parliament by the ad hoc, I think it was a joint committee if I remember correctly, but an ad hoc committee, the Western Cape case was already available. And the ad hoc committee requested the legal advisor to give them an indication whether that act would have an impact on the political party funding bill. And the answer that they received was that the Western Cape case will not affect the promotion of the political party funding bill. However, it was acknowledged at that stage that the Promotion of Access to Information Act will have to be amended. And then similarly, when the Constitutional Court considered and heard arguments, in its judgment, the court indicated that it's up to Parliament to decide how to address the access to political party funding information, either in terms of the Political Party Funding Act, or in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, or both. Now, that was the indication that prompted us to attempt to make sure that the proposed amendments in the Promotion of Access to Information Act speak to and dovetail with the Political Party Funding Act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to our two local people. That is the briefing from both Parliament and from the Department of Justice. As you know, we are going to be dealing with public comments after the end of the month, where we will receive the closing date is end of the month for public comments, and then we start dealing with the deal clause by clause from the 17th of September. But we felt that it would be important that we get this briefing, and so that we are able to start doing our consultations with our parties, and so that when we start processing the deal, we would be much more informed. Any comment, honourable members? Honourable Hisham?
Yeah, Chair, just to clarify procedurally, the provisions now emanating from the Constitutional Court judgment, which we understood, but now the Political Party Funding Act itself, in its nature, currently does not capture that mechanism, and it must be consistent with that act, whatever provision we propose now, as I understand it. I'm not sure whether the regulations is completed for the Political Party Funding Act, and if, where is that? Because I'm looking at this proposal, but I would like to see whether the regulations of the Political Party Funding Act also provide. Just let it.
Thank you very much. Having read the court ruling, we were given 18 months to ratify the defect in the legislation. I just want to check how far we are with regard to the expiry of that period. So far, it must determine our speed in terms of trying to fix the defect of the legislative defect. I want to go to that, Chair. I want to check with the coexistence of the PAIA and the Party Funding Act, which I think is something that has got similarities here and there. I just want to check, did we have time to balance the two so that we don't have the other contradicting the other and that other one contradicting the other? Have we been able to balance the two so that we all are committed in condemning corrupt activities within the political arena? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? Also, it would be important for us to consider whether it would not be prudent for us to process this bill in consultation with the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs, as they are busy dealing with the regulations. It's something that we'll need to think about. Over to you. Honourable Sir.
Yeah. Chair, just in respect of your last suggestion, there was, if you recollect, some public hearings into the regulations were organised by the IEC. And as I understand it, it's the IEC that are busy processing those draft regulations as we speak. There are a very large number of public submissions that were made, thousands of them, I believe. So to the extent that one wants to have input about the regulations and the where the party political funding bill is, act is, I would have suggested that the IEC should come and brief with the matter.
I'm not noted.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, it's fairly easy to align the proposed amendments of the Promotion of Access to Information Act to those, or to the content, to the ambit of the Political Party Funding Act, because we have definitive definitions in that act that deals with, and the crucial definitions are donations and donations in kind. And that's actually where we latch onto the provisions of the Political Party Funding Act. I must admit what was confusing when the Act was published after the President has assented and signed to the bill, the regulations appeared as a second schedule to the Act, and that was confusing. But we picked up in the schedule that, well, what we thought was a determined amount of 100,000, which was actually simply just a proposal, and that is why we refer to the 100,000 in our provision. But that will, of course, now will have to be amended by referring to the prescribed amount in terms of the Political Party Funding Act. So there are technical tweaks that still require to be done, but we have much more clarity now with regard to how we effectively align the two pieces of legislation with each other. And if I might answer the second question with regard to the possible contradiction between the two pieces of legislation, the simple answer would be that the Political Party Funding Act will give us guidance with regard to the proposed amendment of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. The difference between the two pieces of legislation, or the result of the Constitutional Court's judgment, sorry, Chair, I just on a personal note, I just wanted to ask whether I'm speaking too fast. Should I speak slower? Thank you. I forgot where I was, Chair. Oh, yes, sorry. My apologies, Mr. Chair. The difference between the two pieces of legislation is that the Political Party Funding Act only relates to political parties that are represented and political parties that contest elections. The dimension that was added in the Constitutional Court's judgment is the whole issue of independent candidates. And that is where the difference comes in. And that is why it might be, technically speaking, easier to amend PAHIA instead of making a similar provision available in the Political Party Funding Act. What came out from the Constitutional Court's judgment very clearly is that the court favors, or one could argue that the court favors the automatic availability of the information as proposed in the bill, simply because of the fact that the court criticized the fact that there are procedures to be followed and sometimes access fees to be paid, and not all the citizenry of the country have the means to do so. Chair, I think that from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, just to speak on the issue of the time frames, we've also been very worried about the time frames, Chair, because the deadline is fast approaching. Hence, it was decided that this be a committee bill instead of an executive bill, because a committee bill, the process to finalize it, that is, regarded that it would be quicker than an executive bill. So, Chair, we are aware of that. We spoke with the committee and everyone is aware that this bill needs to be really fast tracked, which is to not circumvent any process, especially the public participation process. Also, on the issue of whether the bill, this bill and the Political Party Funding Act were compared, luckily, Chair, the person who drafted the Political Party Funding Act is in our office, so he did have a look at this proposed bill. And as Hanke said, this one goes wider than the Political Party Funding Act in respect of the definition of the independent candidate, because currently we do not have independent candidates contesting provincial and national legislation, but of course, way wider.
and you need to give effect to the court judgment in respect of that. And yeah, I think that's what
Mr. Chair, maybe just one more thing from my side. You will recall that shortly before the May elections, there was an urgent constitutional court application, and it was precisely about independent candidates. The judge said that there is no need for urgency because it's an extremely difficult issue to be decided. That case, I think, and I'm speaking under correction, is currently before the Constitutional Court. So that's a possible another dimension that will come in, but that dimension I do not think will necessarily impact on the bill as it is before the committee at this stage. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, members. This one-page document that was circulated a few minutes ago, it's just a report that must be tabled in the ATC, just to inform the House that after we've been given permission to enter the bill, we have published the bill for public comment. So we'll be tabling it just for information purposes. Just to say that on point number one there, the missing date, that date is the 19th of July.
Committee Secretariat, I think what we need to do is to any issue that the committee needs to make a decision on should be submitted at least the night before. We must not take things for granted that no, they are. If there is any problem, it will be can I suggest that we take some, as we'll be getting the briefing from the Magistrates Commission, members, let's take some time to read this this one page so that we'll come back to it. When we receive the report from the United States Commission. I just don't want us to take things for granted. A comma or one sentence can cause problems. Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the members of the Magistrates Commission who will be briefing us on the suspensions of magistrates.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and the Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. By way of introduction, my My name is Advocate Kasim Musa. I'm the chairperson of the Ethics Committee of the Magistrates Commission.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, I am Hans Meyer, and I'm a magistrate in the Judicial Quality Assurance Magistrate Commission, and advising and making recommendations to the Ethics Division, to the Ethics Committee, and to the Commission itself.
Honourable Chair, during the course of our progress report this morning, perhaps during the course of the report back to you, to the Honourable Committee, will from time to time rely upon Mr. Mayor to come in and assist us. You will observe, Honourable Members, Chair and Members, that there's four matters that we are going to report back to you on. The last briefing that we had with the Portfolio Committee was last year on the 14th of November 2018, and we duly addressed and reported back to the Select Committee on the 27th of February 2019. You will also remember, Honourable Members, that the elections had come in May, and therefore there was a change in the committee, and we were unable to then attend and brief the Portfolio Committee. Now, as you may be full well aware, the Magistrates Commission must, in terms of Section 13(3)(f) of the Magistrates Act 90 of 1993, cause a report of the progress made in respect of inquiries against magistrates, who have been provisionally suspended from office, to be submitted to Parliament every 3 months. And for the reasons that I've cited previously, this was not possible due to the fact that we've had a change in Parliament. So, what also happened is that, in terms of Section 13(3), subsection E of the Act, it provides that the provisional suspension of a magistrate, in terms of paragraph A, lapses after 60 days from the date of suspension, unless the Commission within that period commences its inquiry into the allegation in question by causing a written notice containing the allegations concerned to be served on the magistrate. The first matter that I'd like to perhaps brief the Honourable Members of the Committee is the matter of Mr. E.S. Nzimande, the Regional Court President of KwaZulu-Natal. Honourable Chairperson, perhaps you might permit me to take a slightly longer time in terms of the briefing as I normally would, due to the fact that we have, I see, many new members in the Portfolio Committee, and I would be indebted to you if you grant me the opportunity, perhaps, just to give a background in respect of each of the matters, so that the Honourable Members are up to speed in respect of where we are at currently. Now, in respect of the first matter, Honourable Members, Zimande. Zimande is the Regional Court President of the Regional Division of KwaZulu-Natal. He was appointed as the Regional Magistrate on the 1st of July 2000, and was appointed as the Regional Court President of KwaZulu-Natal on the 1st of June 2011. Now, during the course of his tenure, what had transpired is that the Magistrates Commission received numerous complaints of misconduct against the Regional Court President. So as we are duty-bound when we receive these complaints, a regulation, an investigation in terms of Regulation 26 of the regulations was instituted in order to determine as to whether there were grounds for a charge of misconduct against Mr. E.S. Nzimande. A preliminary investigation. Once the evidence was presented by the investigating officer, the Magistrates Commission considered the evidence that was presented and resolved thereafter on the 31st of August 2018 to charge Mr. Nzimande with misconduct. Accordingly, in terms of the due processes, a charge sheet dated the 31st of August 2018 containing 50 counts of misconduct was personally served on Mr. Nzimande on the 4th of September 2018. In broad strokes, the allegations that Mr. Nzimande faces in the misconduct inquiry are inter alia as follows. One of the duties that Mr. Zimande had as a regional president is from time to time to recommend persons to act as regional magistrates in his division. So on various occasions during the period 2012 to 2016, Mr. Zimande approached the Honorable Minister recommending the acting appointment of a number of attorneys for them to act in the regional courts within his regional division. Now, in turn, for these acting appointments, what Mr. Zimande is alleged to have done is to have received numerous payments from these attorneys in private practice for them to have acted in that time in his division. In addition to those allegations that have been made out against him, what we have also before us is an allegation that during the period 2012 and 2015, the regional court president unlawfully and wrongfully victimized and sexually harassed a female acting regional magistrate in the KZN by making subtle sexual advances to her, calling her into his office, asking her to sit on his lap, and, honorable members, for purposes of good order, the allegations are contained in the report, and I don't believe it merits me to repeat. So it's safe to say that the conduct falls far short of what one would expect of a judicial officer. Once the allegations were served upon him on the 25th of October 2018, he responded to the allegations as set out in the charge sheet, and he pleaded not guilty on all 50 charges preferred against him. What the commission thereafter did is it obviously went out, and just to give you background, honorable members, in terms of how misconduct inquiries are handled at the magistrate commission, it is magistrates who are serving, they are the ones who are appointed to either present or to preside in these particular matters. So during the course of the process, one would remember that because Mr. Zimande is a regional court president, he's very high up in the hierarchical structure of the judiciary. The Magistrate Commission deemed it fit and appropriate in the circumstances not to only appoint a single presenting officer and a single presiding officer. In the spirit of being just and fair, the Magistrate Commission approved on the 22nd of February 2019 this year that three regional magistrates be appointed as presiding officers and two persons to lead the evidence at Mr. Zimande's misconduct inquiry. The Honourable erstwhile chairperson of the Magistrate Commission, Mr. Justice Lehodi, was of the view that due to the nature of the allegations that were levelled against Mr. Zimande, that it be appropriate in addition to the persons that were going to lead the evidence, to have someone from the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions to also lead the evidence in the subsequent inquiry. You will find, and perhaps I'd like to lay your mind at rest, that the delay in this particular proceedings have only but been caused as a result of us awaiting the appointment of a senior advocate from the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions to assist us to lead the evidence. In the interim, we have made numerous inquiries with the newly appointed National Director of Public Prosecutions, and I'm pleased to give you the comfort of your members that as of yesterday morning we received a communique saying that a person has been identified and that we will now be able to proceed with the misconduct inquiry once all the parties get together in respect after consultation regarding a suitable day for the disciplinary inquiry to proceed. I would like to also give you the comfort, honorable members, that Mr. Zimande is suspended from the period that I've told you. However, he's receiving remuneration in this time. I'd also like to draw your attention to the fact that the honorable minister, on the recommendation of the commission, provisionally suspended Mr. Zimande from office on the 5th of October 2018. And as is due process, as due process requires, both the National Assembly and the NCOP have to, in fact, confirm such provisional suspension from office. And the National Assembly confirmed the Minister's decision to suspend Mr. Ears and Zimande on the 5th of October 2018, and the National Council of Provinces passed a similar resolution this year on 19th of March 2019. So where we are at in a nutshell in this matter currently is that the Magistrate Commission is now ready to proceed with the misconduct inquiry. The parties will get themselves together, a suitable date will be arranged, and then the misconduct inquiry will continue. So in terms of that particular matter, perhaps I think for good order, maybe I would, instead of moving on to each and every single matter, I'd like to perhaps maybe give you the briefing in respect of this matter. And perhaps to the Honourable Chair, ask if there's any particular questions or concerns that you'd like to raise in respect of this particular matter before I move on to the next one. Would that be in order, Honourable Chair?
Thank you. Noting the fact that the documents were circulating earlier and members have had time to go through the documents, I think it would be better if we would just not many cases and then we can have a discussion.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The next matter that I'd like to report back on, give you a progress report, Honourable Members, is the one of the Chief Magistrate, Mr. M. D. Hinga of Bloemfontein. Now, in this particular matter, the complainant in the matter is a 42-year-old woman from Mochimbelo. She lodged a complaint with the minister on the 29th of July 2016. And you will remember, or you will now note, that the complaint that came from the complainant didn't come directly to the Magistrates Commission, but the complainant deemed it fit to approach the office of the minister. And the reason and the rationale behind it, as we subsequently has understood, is that she, at the time when she wanted to make the allegations of rape against the Chief Magistrate of Bloemfontein, she was sent from pillar to post by various police stations. Various members of the South African Police Services had sent her from pillar to post. Nobody wanted to, in fact, assist her with these charges. So her complaint was submitted through the offices of the Honourable Minister on the 2nd of November 2016 to the Magistrates Commission. And her letter to the Minister clearly indicated that she has tried on numerous occasions to report the matter, but unfortunately was never assisted by members of the South African Police Services. Now, prior to the matter, in fact, serving before the Magistrates Commission on the 14th of January 2017, Mr. Hinta communicated with the erstwhile Secretary of the Magistrates Commission and produced a letter or a report from the Director of Public Prosecutions, the DPP Free State, indicating that he will not be prosecuted. He also then furnished the then Secretary of the Magistrates Commission with an affidavit indicating that the complainant in the matter was paid a sum of 100,000 rand by a set of attorneys called Marocca attorneys to falsely implicate him in these particular allegations. The complainant, however, persisted in the allegation of rape against him and vehemently denied ever making that particular statement, confirming that she was paid an amount of money to hatch up these false allegations against him. Being duty-bound, the Magistrates Commission then resolved to conduct a preliminary investigation into the allegations of rape against Mr. Hinka. And based on the evidence that was gathered, Mr. Hinka was then charged with two counts of misconduct. And I'm not going to particularly dwell in terms of which section of the regulations, but that in broad strokes, the allegations are that during 2010 and 2011, he unlawfully and wrongfully compelled the complainant to commit an act of sexual intercourse with her. And the charge sheet dated the 24th of November 2017 was accordingly sent to Mr. Hingman's attorney electronically. What subsequently happened upon the serving of the charge sheet is Mr. Hingman's attorney, on the 4th of December 2017, filed a notice of motion in the Gauteng Division of the High Court for an order inter alia to stay the minister's decision to provisionally suspend him from office pending review proceedings, which he intended to institute, and for an order interdicting and restraining the commission from proceeding with a disciplinary inquiry against him on the charges as they were set out on the charge sheet of the 24th of November 2017. I pause to mention, honourable members, that this urgent application that Mr. Hingla brought before the High Court Gauteng was struck from the roll with costs. So that was the first bit of arsenal that he shot out at the Magistrates Commission. The minister then, on the advice of the Magistrates Commission, proceeded to provisionally suspend Mr. Hingla from office with effect from the 29th of November 2017. And this decision to suspend him from office was confirmed by Parliament. He thereafter instituted review proceedings in the Gauteng Division of the High Court on the 23rd of January 2018, applying for an order to review and set aside the minister's decision to provisionally suspend him from office, reviewing and setting aside the commission's decision to institute a disciplinary inquiry against him, and declaring the disciplinary inquiry on the misconduct charges against him to be invalid and unlawful. The Magistrates Commission opposed such an application that he brought before the High Court. Mr. Hingla then terminated his attorney and thus far has failed to instruct another attorney. So we've been sitting in limbo, waiting for a period of time, hence the delay in bringing this matter to finality, waiting for the outcome of the High Court matter and or for Mr. Hingla to properly prosecute his application before the High Court. Having duly noted that he is laying supine in this particular matter, the Magistrates Commission then instructed the Office of the State Attorney to bring an application to dismiss Mr. Hingla's application due to the fact that he has taken no further action and to recover the costs of the state against him. Now, in the absence of him genuinely proceeding with this action against the Magistrates Commission, this application in the High Court, the Commission then deemed it appropriate in the circumstances to continue with the misconduct inquiry against him. And on the 21st of May 2018, the Commission duly appointed a regional magistrate to preside and two regional magistrates to lead the evidence on behalf of the Commission. The matter then was postponed on numerous occasions for various reasons, but not at the behest of the Magistrates Commission, but at the behest of Mr. Hingla. However, through all that entire process, the inquiry ultimately then proceeded on the 14th of January 2019. Four witnesses testified on behalf of the Magistrates Commission during this period, and on the 17th January 2019, the matter was postponed on the request of Mr. Hingla's legal team for further consultation for possible witnesses and to prepare cross-examination on the fourth witness. Three further witnesses testified whereafter the matter was postponed to the 27th, 29th and 30th of May 2019 for further inquiry. During this period, further evidence was presented and then the matter was then postponed to the period 15th to the 19th of July 2019. So currently the matter is proceeding. And on the last occasion, the matter was set down for continuation of the evidence during the period 30th of September to the 4th of October 2019. Mr. Hingla, currently being provisionally suspended from office, is still receiving his remuneration. The next matter, honourable members, I'd like to brief you on is the matter of Ms. L.B. Freeman from Oslo Bay, a senior magistrate. Ms. Freeman is a senior magistrate and the judicial head of office of the Mossel Bay District Court. She was appointed as a senior magistrate at Mossel Bay on the 1st of May 2017. Having received allegations of misconduct against Ms. Freeman, the Ethics Committee of the Magistrates Commission, the Ethics Division of the Magistrates Commission, conducted a preliminary investigation into a plethora of complaints against Ms. Freeman. Based on the evidence that was received during the course of the investigation, a charge sheet dated the 17th of November 2017 containing 24 counts of misconduct was personally served on Ms. Freeman on the 23rd of November 2017. In broad strokes, the charges preferred against Ms. Freeman relate to various acts of dishonesty during the period 2015 to 2017. And I'll just in a broad manner just give you a broad base of what the allegations are. So in respect of 21 of the misconduct charges, it is alleged that Ms. Freeman made a false and incorrect statement regarding transport claims where the kilometers claimed are more than the existing distances between the destinations. She then indicated amongst her claims that she put in that she had performed an inspection in loco at a location while no such inspection in loco was ever held. She claimed for kilometers traveled in that instance. On another instance, she claimed that she used an Audi A4 whilst in truth and in fact she used a Fiat Uno and claimed those additional kilometers and additional capacity, engine capacity. So clearly creating a huge problem for the public purse and the fiscus. And we find that conduct of this particular nature simply cannot be tolerated. Yeah. She also, Ms. Freeman, also failed to disclose to the commission that she, in fact, had a previous conviction for theft. So that goes to the heart of the integrity of the individual. Then when she applied for the position of senior magistrate, and amongst the form, in the form you will remember, or perhaps if you're not privy to it, but there's a part of the form that asks you, are you a director or a member of a company, and can you please disclose all your directorships? And she responded in that particular application, not applicable. During the course of the vetting process and looking through the application, it emerged that she, in fact, is an active director and founding member in a company called Southern Cape Fish Cooperative Limited. And I just want to revisit this aspect about the conviction of theft. She said she was never convicted of any criminal offense. And in fact, she was convicted on the 6th of May, 1993 in the Potchefstroom Magistrates Court on theft. Then what had transpired is once the notice was served, the disciplinary inquiry proceeded against Ms. Freeman at Mossel Bay on the 21st of February, 2018. She was unrepresented at the first appearance, and she requested the presiding officer to postpone the inquiry 22nd March 2018 in order for her to obtain legal representation. On the 21st of March 2018, Ms. Freeman was still unrepresented and indicated that the attorney that she had approached to assist her was unavailable. So on numerous occasions the disciplinary inquiry was postponed at the behest of the magistrate due to reasons of saying that, look, I do not have an attorney, I require an attorney from Oshawaran to come and assist me, and at all material times, the presiding officer has assisted her. Now, when the inquiry was once again postponed to the period 12th to 14th of September 2018, without giving prior notice to the presiding officer of the inquiry, Ms. Freeman went off to the High Court, the Western Cape High Court, for a ruling that certain statements be made available to the defense at that stage. Now, this caused a further delay in the inquiry to commence, and the High Court then ruled that the statements be made available to her. Obviously, in the spirit of being transparent and fair and in the interest of justice, the Magistrates Commission complied with the order of court and handed her the documentation that was necessary. So the matter had the misconduct inquiry had proceeded, and accordingly, without bogging you down with the mechanics of the various dates that the matter proceeded on, ultimately judgment was handed down in this particular matter, and on the 24th of July 2019, the presiding officer found Ms. Freeman guilty on all 29 charges of misconduct which the Magistrates Commission preferred against her. Both the parties had an opportunity to obviously address the presiding officer in the imposition of a suitable sentence upon her, and it's postponed until the 12th of September 2019. In addition to the misconduct inquiry proceeding against her, having her found guilty, the Magistrates Commission has also reported the matter to the South African Police Services to investigate charges of fraud against her. In respect of Ms. Freeman, the NCOP and the National Assembly confirmed a provisional suspension on the 5th of September 2018 and the 25th of October 2018. So that's where we are at currently in respect of this week. I'm just going to hand over to Mr. Mayor just to add something onto the record. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, maybe we can just clarify. She failed to disclose to the Commission when she applied for a senior magistrate post, the head of office at Mossel Bay, that she has been convicted of theft and that she failed to disclose being a director at a fishing company. So that's why she has been appointed, based on one of it.
Honourable members, I'm now going to move to the last matter that I want to brief you on, and that is the matter of the Chief Magistrate J.F. van Schalkwyk of Kempton Park. And perhaps before I get into the merits of this particular matter that I want to brief you on, one of the questions I suppose that must be ringing in your mind, and perhaps you're just waiting to ask me as soon as I finish the briefing, is why some of these matters are taking so long. You'll observe in this particular matter, this matter is before us for almost 6 years, from 2013. And I'm going to perhaps give you the comfort and give you the reasons to indicate to you as to why this matter has taken such a long time. But perhaps if I may just be permitted to mention to you that you will observe in the previous matters as well that the modus in many of these matters is that when magistrates are faced with misconduct inquiries, they continually are delaying the proceedings by launching proceedings in the High Court. They want to bring review applications upon applications, and these are the sort of applications that unnecessarily take time and delay the finalization of these particular matters. And I want to give the Honourable Chairperson and the Committee the comfort to say that to you that the Magistrates Commission does every single thing possible to ensure that these matters are speedily finalized, so we don't unnecessarily delay these proceedings. And you would have observed in the previous matters that if there was any delay at all, such delay was never caused by the Magistrates Commission, but by the person whom misconduct inquiries were being proceeded against. Now, in respect of Ms. Judy van Schalkwyk, as far back as 2013, on the 11th of May, the Magistrates Commission considered Ms. van Schalkwyk's representations relating the desirability to provisionally suspend her from office, resolved to recommend to the minister that she be provisionally suspended pending an investigation into her fitness to hold office as contemplated in Section 13.3a of the Magistrates Act 90 of 1993. The Honourable Minister, on the advice of the Commission, then provisionally suspended Ms. van Schalkwyk, tabled a report in Parliament, and on the 12th of November 2013, Parliament confirmed Ms. van Schalkwyk's provisional suspension from office. Now, having conducted a preliminary investigation into numerous complaints of alleged misconduct, the Magistrates Commission then proceeded to charge her with 18 counts of misconduct. Ms. van Schalkwyk at all material times had an attorney and wanted the commission to deal with her matter through her attorneys. So on the 1st of August 2013, the Magistrates Commission served the attorney with the charge sheet. On the 18th of September, you will remember the charge sheet was served on the 1st of August 2013. A very short period elapsed after the charge sheet was served, and immediately thereafter, the Magistrates Commission then proceeded to appoint a presiding officer and a person to lead the evidence. She was informed accordingly in writing. On the 7th of October 2013, the attorney acting on behalf of Ms. Rajkarpik then wrote to the commission objecting against the appointment of the person leading evidence to lead the evidence of the misconduct inquiry. The response of the Magistrates Commission was very simple, that the appointment of the person leading evidence was done transparently and in terms of the regulations and the applicable legislation, and we did not find any difficulty in the appointment of such a person, and advised Ms. Rajkarpik that if she had an element of discomfort in that regard, she should then raise such a query and complaint before the presiding officer at the subsequent misconduct inquiry. Once that was handed over to her, she thereafter then embarked on requesting numerous further particulars in the matter. And the usual standard mantra you will find, will there further particulars are requested with specificity, and a whole host of documentation was requested. The person leading evidence then, at that point in time, responded to the queries that were raised, gave her all the necessary documentation that was in fact needed, and the matter was then properly argued before the presiding officer in this matter. Then what subsequently happened is the matter proceeded, was postponed on a few occasions, and then at a certain stage she indicated that she now has obtained the services of senior counsel, and I think the senior counsel advocate Silius SC was appointed in the particular matter, and the inquiry was then postponed at a certain stage to the 30th of October 2015 in order for the defense to institute a motion application to the High Court, amongst others, to seek a declarative order challenging the validity and the promulgation of the regulations and the code of conduct for magistrates. The Magistrates Commission then instructed the Office of the State Attorney to oppose such an application. And on the 14th of August 2015, Ms. Vanskarvik and three other applicants compelled the Minister and the Secretary of the Magistrates Commission to provide the applicants with any information, including copies of any recommendations by the Commission to the Minister in terms of Section 16. So essentially what Ms. Rajkarpik proceeded to do in her application was to ask for a declaratory order from the High Court to set aside the regulations of the magistrates, regulations for judicial officers, and also to set aside the code of conduct of magistrates. Now, safe to say that the matter was heard on the 15th of March 2017. Now remember, this application was launched in 2015. So up until the time that a court delivered judgment on this particular matter and heard the matter, the misconduct inquiry simply could not proceed any further. So this matter was then sitting on our books. We had to sit and wait until the High Court deliberated on this particular matter. This matter was only then heard in 2017 on the 15th of March. When the matter was heard, judgment was reserved. On the 1st of August 2017, the High Court then delivered judgment in this particular matter and dismissed the applicant's case with costs. Then, what happened thereafter? The applicant then filed a notice of application for leave to appeal to either the full bench or the Supreme Court of Appeal on the 29th of August 2017. Now, during this time, once again, there's nothing that we could do with the misconduct inquiry because this is a, these are proceedings that we have to wait upon the outcome of. Then on the 8th of November 2017, the High Court heard both the parties and dismissed the applicant's leave to appeal with costs. Then, once we became privy of the outcome of this particular matter, the Magistrates Commission then, it was clear that there were no further proceedings pending, and therefore, in the circumstances, the Commission then decided that we must now push on with the misconduct inquiry. Sorry, I'm just reminded also, once she lost in the High Court, she immediately thereon then proceeded to petition the Supreme Court of Appeal. The petition to the Supreme Court of Appeal was lodged on the 13th of December 2017. On the 12th of March 2018, the Supreme Court of Appeal dismissed the application with costs. So up until that point now, as the 12th of March 2018, the Magistrates Commission was unable to proceed with the misconduct inquiry. You will be pleased to note that once we became privy on the 12th of March 2018 that the application was dismissed with costs, immediately 3 days later, on the 15th of March 2018, the Commission immediately proceeded to instruct the person to lead evidence, to set the misconduct inquiry down for hearing, and to proceed. We even went to the extent of obviously trying to set it down as quickly as possible and deemed it appropriate in the circumstances that it be even set down on the Saturday, being the 14th of April 2018. But on that day, when the matter was called again, Ms. von Schalkwyk's attorney appeared and asked the matter be postponed to the period 3rd to the 6th of July and 9th to the 11th of July 2018 for hearing. Then on the 5th of June 2018, Ms. von Schalkwyk's attorney advised the Commission that his mandate was terminated and he was no longer acting on her behalf. The person leading evidence then requested Ms. von Schalkwyk to please come back and inform us as to who the new attorney was. During the period 3rd to the 6th of July, they exchanged evidential documentation, and the inquiry did not proceed on the 9th of July. It was postponed to the 27th of September 2018. On the 27th of September 2018, Ms. von Schalkwyk's attorney was not again available to proceed on that day, and it was agreed by mutual agreement that the matter will now proceed during the period 1st to the 3rd of October 2018 for hearing. At the hearing, the defense again raised numerous amounts of points in limine which the presiding officer made a ruling. And eventually, evidence commenced being led during the period 2nd and 3rd of October 2018. The matter was then postponed to the 10th and 12th of December last year. The first witness testified. It was postponed until this year, 21st to the 25th of January 2019. On the 19th of January 2019, the person leading evidence advised the ethics division that the attorney for Ms. von Schalkwyk had a fatal motorcycle accident, and in that accident, both himself and his wife passed on. So the matter did not proceed on the 21st of January 2019. Ms. von Schalkwyk then decided to proceed in person. The matter then proceeded, and it was finally postponed again to the 15th to the 19th of July 2019 for further cross-examination of the witnesses. So the matter currently is underway, and the inquiry then proceeded. The matter proceeded in July 2019, and at that point in time, when the matter proceeded on the 15th of July 2019, Ms. von Schalkwyk then terminated the services of her legal team shortly thereafter, based on record that once again she'll conduct her own case. She continued the cross-examination, and what had happened is that now the matter is postponed to the period 30th of September to the 4th of October, and also 13th and the 24th of January 2020. Now, with the Commission being faced with this type of conduct on the part of Ms. von Schalkwyk, what we had resolved at that point in time is that it was clear, as much as day followed night, that Ms. von Schalkwyk was extremely comfortable sitting at home, being being remunerated on a monthly basis, and just using the funds to litigate ad infinitum, and not allowing this process to come to an end. So what the Magistrates Commission then did, we approached Parliament, and we then requested that her remuneration, that she not receive any remuneration. That is one of the steps that we in fact took. And Parliament then very kindly acceded to our request. And currently, Ms. von Schalkweg is on provisional suspension, but she's not receiving any remuneration at all. So essentially, you will find, honourable members, that although this matter is outstanding for 6 years, the evidence that I've presented to you thus far will clearly indicate that there's not been any cause for the delay on the part of the Commission. And we have done every single thing humanly possible to ensure that the matter proceeds, and also at the same time to protect the fiscus and to ensure that she does not receive remuneration any longer. So that is the last matter that I want to brief you on, and we can thereafter take any questions that you may have. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. With respect to Magistrate Ms. Amanda, it's alleged that certain lawyers were paying him money. Were there any cases opened against them? Were they reported to the Legal Practice Council or to the Law Society then? What has happened to them, because they are also officers of the court?
Honourable Chair, may I respond? The matter has been reported in terms of PRECA to the SAPS, and they are still busy with the investigation. We expect that action will be taken very shortly, soon. Because these are matters, some are even matters involved, so it's very difficult in a complex situation. But the matter has been reported, and we are following it up.
Looking to the appropriate legal body that, especially for the item, is resigned.
Well, Chair, if there's no misconduct or no charges, I don't think it's appropriate for the Commission then at this stage to file a complaint with the appropriate law societies. But that's for the Commission to decide. If they're still waiting for the conclusion of the police investigation. It's very complex and sensitive.
Honourable members, if you have questions and comments, Honourable Mola, Honourable Nebo Drachen, Honourable Fisher Mohammed, Honourable Mufuku, Honourable Jaya, Honourable Janji, Honourable Mustuma, in that order.
Chairman, I think I'm covered firstly on the matter that relates to why are these cases taking this long. I think the advocate there tried to cover that aspect on the particular reasoning to that effect. So now to that check, we are busy trying to achieve a stable and a peaceful society. But amidst our endeavors, there are police officers who refuse, who barely refuse to help members of society when they have an allegation to file with government. It's so embarrassing. But the report is saying the complainant then therefore wrote a letter to the minister. What I want to check, Chair, my first and the last comment in this matter. Has there been a passage of information from the Minister of Justice to the Minister of Police
with regard to what is alleged to be the conduct of police officials regarding this matter. So if not, if yes, if the answer is in the affirmative, then how far is that process in terms of identifying and investigating those that which were played a role of taking this complaint from pillar to post? When it regards to reporting of a crime, boss, that's where, Chair, our role as government starts in terms of combating criminal activity within our society. Report to police. That's where it all starts. Now, if members of society can get access to nearest police station, then it becomes a problem. Our endeavors are going to go into vain. So, Chair, if there was a passage of message to the Minister of Police, how far is that process? What happened? If they have that information to them. If not, Chair, so if we're able to know what role as part of the peace and stability family, so that we know what role can we then play in terms of ensuring that FAPS as a department deals with this matter. Leave the substantive issue of the case, alleged rape and other things, which is in process of court and the hearing by the Magistrate Commission. But there is this element as well that defeats the same purpose why we wake up every day and sit here. Thank you very much.
Let us thank the Match Commission for the reports provided and the update. We very much appreciate that. Obviously, this is a public accountability process, including the report to the committee. There's two issues that I just want to make. One is an observation. It's very clear from the reports presented that there is a clear trend of abuse of the due process. I want to stress it as strongly as that. Notwithstanding some of the litigation process granted, but clearly the pattern of changing of representation in all these cases as presented indicates already. Now there is a way in dealing with that, and the Chief Justice has in the normal course of court procedures, as we run the civil and criminal courts, direct us to that effect, the presiding officers. But that's in the court domain. In what we call investigations and DC processes, perhaps we will need to follow the same principle when briefing presiding officers, who should be alert, and often they're from prior practice, or as we heard from practitioners as NPA or prosecutors. The first issue for me was is the capacity of the commission in these type of matters, and given the history, I mean 6 years and so on, this is not on in a modern democracy such as ours, especially where the community are yearning for justice to be seen, to be done. I'm not going to speak on the merits. Some of the individuals I know personally, the issue here is simply the due process that has taken so long. I mean, the last one in Kempton Park, Chief Magistrate, this matter, in my humble opinion, should have been finalized by now. And we note, notwithstanding the Commission's efforts in eliminating the salary, and the matters underway, we see it at the 30th of September again. Hopefully there's no other trick in the book coming now. The issue is simple there, there's clear evidence. And but the capacity of the commission, one would like to just hear a bit on that. Sometimes we know institutions or entities are thin spread. And we didn't say anything on that. Maybe there isn't a challenge, maybe there is. Just want to hear a bit more on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Magistrate Commission for the briefing and the report. I am new to the committee, so I really appreciate the background information. I would like to support what my previous honourable colleague said in relation to the rape allegation. I'm very concerned, we are very concerned with increasing violence against women and children, and we hear this where our own entities refuse to assist and delay the prosecution. So I would like to know that when the commission finds out about that, what does it do? If there are people refuse to prosecute, what is the commission able to do? Because you have to report to Parliament every 3 months, and during the 3 months, the case and the evidence of the rape, everything gets delayed. And so, yeah, what happens in that? What does the commission do instead of this person having to, as last resort, having to go to the minister, and the trauma that this person has gone through, it really is not fair in the entire sector of women. So reporting cases have to be easier. Then in relation to the one who had the previous conviction against her name, I'm wondering, does the commission not screen, or does SAPS not screen or vet candidates before they get appointed as magistrates? Does that happen or not? I would assume that in screening or vetting, that would have been picked up. And the magistrates seem to think that the commission has bottomless funding to continue going on and on for years with these cases. So I'm curious about your budget for you to do your work. Do you ever go into deficits or anything like that? Your annual budget, is it available enough to do your work while there are so many delays? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also to thank the commission for the report, and also for giving us a detailed report. In fact, giving us a detailed report on this on these matters. But firstly, I just want to, it's just a matter of, since we already mentioned that some of us are new in this committee, I want to know, is the chairperson of the ethics the same chairperson of the commission? If maybe that can be clarified, verified for me. And then the second one, on these issues, I think I concur with my colleagues. It seems as if chairperson, there is an abuse of the system, particularly by our experts, people that we rely on, in terms of making things, our law easy, and also helping the government in providing services to the people. I think some of the things here, I just get a feeling that they are deliberate, they are done deliberate. So I'm sure in future we must hear a report exactly, because now we hear about why all these things are happening. But now we would also like to answer maybe the question of what can the commission do also to assist us in making sure that the internal mechanisms are in place to make sure that such abuse is eliminated, or if not, at least try to minimize it. And then on the issue of vetting of the magistrates before they can get employed, I'm shocked that that magistrate had an opportunity to stay for such a long time without us, meaning the commission and us
to be able to pick that. You know, I just feel like somebody somewhere did this deliberately. And these are the issues that we need to take care of. And people must pay. People must be punished for such behavior. I can imagine, Che, if this is so hard to discipline or to find a magistrate guilty on such matters, I can imagine what is happening on the community. I know what is happening, but I can imagine for somebody who does not have money, who does not have a knowledge, who is not an expert in these issues. Our communities are suffering on the ground, wanting to get savings, and people are just playing games like this. So can we come up with maybe a way in making sure that people are punished, really punished, or maybe there must be an element within our mechanism where we can find them paying for such a behavior. And then also, Chairperson, I'm sorry, I don't want to waste your time. There's another one. This one of the rape that is taking place in our institutions. Chairperson, I wonder how many, because this can't be only one case. Can the Commission assist us within the work that you do and make a situation in a way that women within this institution are able to come forward and report such issues? As for those who connive with this magistrate or the senior magistrate in terms of paying money for them to get job and all those things, those people need to be exposed. I think I concur with the chairperson that we next time we must get a report as to who are those and how many were they, so that we can be able to follow up. Because this culture of abuse, of people paying or exchanging for sexual favors and all that, it's not going to stop now. And can the Commission assist us on that? Let's, in closure, Chairperson, the last one, in conclusion, I would say this one of 6 years, is it possible that maybe the Commission also come up with a report where you request the committee to assist you to, in fact, to make sure that we don't take so long when people are playing games in terms of using the loopholes within the system in prolonging the case? Can we maybe have an understanding, or maybe assist you in making sure that in future we don't stay for so many years paying people who are sitting at home, not working, knowing exactly that they will keep on playing these games, and then they know that they will be paid? Can we make sure that maybe we discuss this one going forward in order to assist you? Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think where you left about the Monday came, I wish that the Commission is, thank you for the report, to submit maybe the case number of the matter of the attorney that is saying the case that are with the police, so that there can be action. The committee has a relationship with the police and also the minister to be taken up there. That's where it starts, so that there should be monitoring on cases like that. And we are also mindful that most police officers, if it's a case about a prosecutor or a magistrate, they don't want to handle. And that's where we should start looking at it. It goes again with the case
cases, as my former colleague was talking about, rape. Medicines that are actually in the record of rape themselves, they treat cases of rape in a shady way. And we know that we live in a patriarchal society. So things like that should be checked because they are very serious. The other thing is clear for me is that the chief magistrate, generally, they like to abuse power. They like to abuse power. And when you look at the case of the Van Schalkwyk, you ask a question 6 years, but also a blame should be passed on you by me as an individual listening to you. Is that the magistrate, when they preside in matters, they are quick to say this person must be sent for psychiatric observation, but you don't do it to your own. Don't you think this person was supposed to be sent there too, to be checked whether is this person in a good state? But also it says, how many times, or do you have a deep rhythm of magistrates? They are human beings. Do you also think of making sure that once you observe problems like that, instead of changing a person from the family court to another court, maybe say it's on a domestic violence, why don't you look at that person going just for deep rhythm? Because I'll tell you, problems like this, I'm from Kaunting, and I deal with matters of domestic violence most of the time in femicide. That's where I am with my organization. And you find cases of magistrates that disrespect the law. And that's where it's coming from. And a lot of people are scared of writing to you because they think that you connive with them, because many cases came at the door. They've never received. And the case at hand, that goes with what I'm saying, that the magistrates, the chief magistrate most of the time abuses power. It's like magistrate Naive in Pretoria. I can tell you now, and I can tell even in front of you, say he abuses power. When you know the stories in all the papers in Pretoria, when there's a high profile case, he goes for it. You can mention them, you can go and check even in Pretoria News, and then you see the beginning of power. If he doesn't like you, or he's got some people he hasn't reported somewhere, the case is removed from this magistrate to this magistrate. And that is very wrong. The other thing is that on the case of this woman, I think my advice, she needs an observation. She is not well. And I'm speaking as a woman. Women, or generally people, we think that we are all normal. We find that we have disorder, and we don't know about them. So let us check on that. On the case of the Muscle Bay of three men, I mean, you know, this person, I don't understand that a person was actually acquainted and nobody noticed until this person was a senior magistrate that this person had a case of theft. Surely there was no victim. But also, why do you see this problem now? And this is actually the practice in the magistrate commission, and even how they are appointed. You find that a person whose contract will expire, and after it has expired, when you reapply, then they tell you about a certain case that they had before. Why should people be treated like that? And lucky, this committee becomes sober. I'm sure all the members, you find that we've been CC'd with cases, 20 of us, of issues that are happening in the country, of how magistrates are treated, how they are reappointed, and I think we need to check up onto that. We don't need those things. They need to be dealt with you yourself. And hence we are always saying to them that please don't send them to us. First go, first please, to the relevant people on protocol. When you are failed, you can come to this committee to be saying that they have been failed. But I wish that we need to go deeper and deeper into checking how the chief magistrates behave generally, and how many are you having of women that are supported? Most of the time, the chief magistrates, women are very few, and they don't have support. And I wish that we can also start there. And the last part is the chair. I will take this opportunity because the commission is here. I don't know, I've been listening to a number of cases of maintenance. And I happened to be asked to say, please go to this court and observe. And I went there
because it's about responsibility. And I found this measure saying to this to people case to case, please go and write an affidavit. Please go and write an affidavit, not listening to matter. Is that how we treat people? It can be. It can be. People need to, we've got children, we've got families, and the rights of children in most cases become actually in danger in this. So it's in particular in Pretoria Court. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I'm covered by my colleagues. I'm not going to repeat the issues that I wanted to ask, which they have raised. I'll just focus on the two individuals, but also Chair, if you allow, to make a few proposals in terms of the way forward. Maybe the first thing, just in relation to demand, there's two things there. There seems to be a modus operandi that he was operating under. So was the acting meant that he would be, have been the one actively looking for that? It's not people coming to him they want to act. Mm-hmm. He has to designate that, he has got to think about who. So in this case, so I want you to check with you if you agree with what I'm saying. So his modus operandi was, and I'm going to put it as raw as it is, that if he had identified a man to act, he needed money from that man. If he identified a woman, he knew he wanted sex with that woman. Am I correct when I say that? Because you see, the one that he had to sit down in his office and told her that you are here because of me, it means he did not want money from, she didn't pay. She was meant to pay through a body. So this is his modus operandi. Perhaps further, if we're, because it's just curious for me in all of this, perhaps how many men he therefore recruited based looking for money, and how many women he recruited looking for what he was looking for, which is not judicial matters. Here is somebody who wanted someone to act, not for judicial matters. And it could have been a very incompetent person, but there's something else he wanted. So let me leave that one. Let me go to, I think, what's more puzzling is the Yinka matter. I think the first criticism I want to put forward is to the commission itself. Because other member Nola has addressed me in terms of the issue that she's raised. Firstly, here is somebody who's accused of rape. This is rape. This is something that must go to the police. This victim tried that, sent from pillar to post, until she sent this to the minister. Even if this is with the minister or the commission, This is alleged rape. The commission, that's not his role to investigate rape. It's not the commission's role. That is a police matter. Nowhere here are we told that the commission, upon receiving this, then, because if this matter is concluded and it goes to court, you're likely to get this person scot-free on the basis that there's no evidence that this person was. The commission can only deal with matters that the magistrate put the commission into disrepute. There's still a gap from where I'm sitting. You don't get a report that says the commission, upon receiving this, then with the victim said, will go to a particular police station for a charge to be laid. So this matter finds its way in court. So I don't know where you taking this matter as a commission. This is my worry, Chair. They're going with it, but I don't see the end. But they're not empowered to deal with those matters. Where are you taking this thing of Yinka without it being a police matter? Please help me with that. Because it could have been very easy with the commission, that where she reported first, to go to that police station, for that police station to proceed with the statement. Because it's not even one, as Molo was saying, it was sent from pillar to post. Why did the commission not do that? I think that we were being failed here by the commission, unless there's a different explanation that you're going to give. I don't know where you're taking this matter, quite frankly, if I may make that point. Then, Chair, just a few observations, but I want to make a proposal. Was you presenting to us, you know what you're presenting to us is, you're saying to Parliament, to the National Assembly today, we have a problem. You're not putting anything forward. This is what is the remedy. Because even after you'd go to the next and the last date, there's no proactive intervention that says, how are we going to curtail these things in future? You don't seem to have thought about that. I must make the point, Chair, that I think we must, so that if this thing is going to Parliament this time, I think we must be able to ask you to come back, because Parliament, NAA has got 4 members it designated to be part of the commission. There's something that needs to be fixed in the system, in how things are done. And I think we can't just be ticking the box about us meeting here and dealing with problems when those could be avoided in intervened in some, and I'll share some of what I think you should be guiding us on as a commission. Because quite clearly, the members saying there's a convergence of abuse and defeating of the ends of justice here, either from the police, and as Member Mohammed was saying, the abuse of the due processes. Because the report you bring in is a report of postponement. All of 4 of them. Every page I'm just highlighting how many postponements. You know, that indicates that abuse. I think, Chair, should we not go beyond, even if somebody is dismissed at the end, should we not go beyond dismissal? Because this requires to where, from where I'm sitting, the striking of the role of that profession, of some of these. These are individuals that are rotten, that do not belong in the magistracy, that do not belong as judicial officers. So it can't just be, when you look at this, it's clear beyond suspension, this is where we're going to get to. There's got to be very stern measures that you put it so that you inhibit or you stem the tide of the abuse of the court. Because if we're to go to Parliament, I think Parliament must indicate that its displeasure on the delaying tactics, on the poor work that is happening here. But the question I wanted him to ask to help us with, what are you proposing? If there's nothing, perhaps as a committee, we must think about that. What is it that needs to have to be done to really attend to some of these matters? So I was really looking forward to hear that, because I think Parliament has deployed people in the commission. It must give them a particular mandate to say, I'm worried about this trend as an NA, and therefore to stop this trend, 1, 2, 3 steps must be attended to without infringing on anybody's rights. But I think we're going to do those. Thank you, Chair.
Are there any other hands?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I'm largely covered by the colleagues that spoke before me. Maybe I will just emphasize on 2 points which bother me very greatly. The first one is that our country is becoming the rape capital of the world. Now it becomes worse if the people who should be protecting them, especially members of the judiciary, are themselves guilty of those offenses. So I would like to know if it is not possible to root the system of these people. Because as my colleague spoke before me, he said they do not belong to the magistracy. Now, if they have been convicted of crimes against women, they should be picked up during interview. There should be some kind of vetting that will ring the bell that the person is disqualified, should not be appointed. That's number one. Number two, it's even more concerned if the magistrate can do it to another magistrate who is fully aware of her rights. How much about the innocent and ignorant woman out there in the street? If a magistrate herself cannot be protected by the senior magistrate who is now committing these crimes instead of combating these crimes. Another very big concern to me is what is happening to the fiscus when the state has literally run out of resources, financial resources. And there are people who are, as my colleagues have called them, playing games, abusing the system, getting cases that were there since 2013. They are still on. I think what encourages these people is that they are suspended on salary. Now my concern is, if they are eventually found guilty, what happens to the salary that they've been collecting in all the years that the case has been on due to them playing these delaying tactics? Has the state a way of recouping these funds? Thank you very much.
Just something that I said. When I was asking about the magistrate Naim, I want to know where is the case of Busasa and when is it going to be suspended?
Thank you very much. I am still not convinced that you should not have reported the matter to the Law Society. Because reporting to the Law Society, I'm not saying they are guilty, I'm saying that they must be investigated. And if you thought it was important on the basis of the information you had, you would charge Mr. Ndemanga. He was bribing the two parties to the offense. So I really do think that and also with Law Society. I mean, I think our legal bodies is generally a challenge, because with some people they move very quick to have them strike off the law, and in some cases they just pretend as if nothing is happening. I think I'm really I am concerned, and I think also the type of presiding officers, I think they are extremely liberal. And that is why people are just playing the system. I think
Robert, should you say lay people?
Liberal. I think some of the postponements that they are granting, I think some, even to a lay person, you can see that most of these people, they do not have a task force. Why they keep on postponing or asking for postponements? But I also do think that it's not, when we calculate cost to the state, it's not only the amount that is being paid as salaries to those magistrates. It's a cost that you are here. The amount of time you spend here, it is a cost. So it's not only a direct financial cost. Even time can be costed. So the people that you are appointing, the time that is being spent by the commission and by the state, and then allowing ourselves to be played in this way. Reasonable postponements would agree that they are necessary at times, and in the interest of justice, we have to grant them. But when you can clearly see that the person is just playing the system, and there seems to be also they are playing along, but each day you postpone, it's a cost to all the taxpayers. And I think lastly, I think there is a strong feeling from the committee that we would need to make a follow-up to the minister to check how far was the matter taken up with the Minister of Police, and especially that it is a violence against women, and it's a disservice to community members. So we'll take that matter up with our own Minister of Justice and our own Minister of Police. And I also think that the other issue you raised is the issue of the National Director of Public Prosecution with regards to the evidence leader from the NPA. We will also try and make a follow-up, so that we would want to also be of service to you to ensure that you do your work in a way that is much more productive. So we undertake that we will make those follow-ups in time to assist you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Might I just be permitted then to respond to some of the matters I'll hand over to Mr. Mayor? Firstly, I'd like to perhaps maybe just start by saying that I have taken cognizance of the comments that have been made. And I'd like to say that before we appear before this particular committee, we were already given to understand that this committee is robust. And this particular committee here. And I must tell you, I am most heartened to sit across the honorable members and to listen to the concerns that you have raised, because it would appear that we are all on the same page. Now, I want to perhaps maybe just begin by saying to you that firstly, I will just sketch out in broad strokes the structure of the Magistrates Commission. So, and perhaps just permit me that during the course of my response, I may touch on many of the aspects that you have raised with me. But so to start by, the Magistrates Commission is comprised in the following manner. You have the chairperson of the Magistrates Commission, who is the Honorable Mr. Justice Ledwaba. He is a Deputy Judge President of the Gauteng Division, Pretoria. So to answer that particular question, you have the chairperson, then you have the secretariat, then you have members, several members from various organizations, meaning people who represent the chief magistrate, the regional court presidents, the organized profession, members of parliament that will form the Magistrates Commission. Then within the commission, honorable members, what you have are subcommittees. Now, I sit before you, or we sit before you today, representing the subcommittee that deals with ethics. So I am the chairperson of the Ethics Committee, and I have 9 members that that sit on my particular committee. Mr. Hans Meyer is a member of the Ethics Division. So what generally happens is when allegations of misconduct are forwarded to the Magistrates Commission, perhaps to the Secretariat, it immediately gets channeled off to the Ethics Division. The Ethics Division then opens the file, registers it, and then starts the preliminary process of getting the documentation and looking at the allegations. Now, each and you have the various different subcommittees. So you have the appointments committee, you have a legislation committee, you have a committee that deals with grievances. But there's two committees that are always extremely busy. And the two committees that are busy are the appointments and the ethics. Now, previously, what used to happen, honorable members, is that ethics matters used to get registered, a large amount of them used to get registered, and these matters used to be deliberated after a lengthy period of time. And in consultation with the Ethics Division and my members, I was of the view that these are matters that ultimately fly in the face of what the judiciary should be, to the extent that it's bringing us into severe disrepute. The ordinary person out on the street expects proper service delivery. They expect you to, the last bastion of any society is the judiciary. And we should be beyond reproach. And to that extent, what I have instituted as the chairperson is to have meetings almost on a monthly basis, so that we keep these matters on a tight time frame, and that we deliberate on these matters very, very quickly, and we get the matters way forward. So I'm pleased to let you know that we're not sitting with too many outstanding misconduct matters. We try to resolve them as quickly as possible. But I'd like to share with you, honorable members, that I don't know in other organizations, but particularly in the Magistrates Commission, the Ethics Committee and the Ethics Division is one section that is on a complete and a total onslaught on a daily basis. Members of the lower judiciary simply do not want to see the Ethics Committee and the Division exist. They will do every single thing humanly possible to ensure that they bring it into disrepute. To the extent you will observe where they even took the regulations of the Code of Conduct, and in fact the existence of the Ethics Division and Committee to bring that into disrepute and to try and disband it. Their argument is that they prefer that these matters be dealt with at their level, at their courts. And we are saying, but the Ethics Committee, the Magistrates Commission, is an independent statutory body that will deal with these matters without fear, favor, and prejudice. We don't know who the relevant person that is involved in matters. But if you're going to deal with these matters at regional level, what's going to happen is that you're going to reach a point where friends are going to deal with matters for friends, and you're never going to get proper ethics being dealt with. So, like, to deal with the matter where you say why there was no proper vetting in respect of Ms. Freeman, that matter would not fall under the purview of the Ethics Committee. That matter will fall under the purview of the Appointments Committee. So when people then go to the Appointments Committee, they would have to make that necessary disclosure. And I think we have raised it on numerous occasions. When matters of these natures come to us, we immediately, through the Secretariat of the Ethics Division, immediately send it off to the Appointments Committee as well, to alert them to the fact that, listen, you should have done a proper vetting process. That should have been done, because these things are now falling and coming through the cracks at times. So, essentially, what happens is that we are dealing with these matters on a daily basis. So I just want to move on. And in order of the comments that we made, then I'll hand over to Mr. Meyer. Yes, I think to say to you that, for example, the comment was made that there's a great concern relating to chief magistrates. But I want to say to you that if you, honorable members, were to take a look at the nature of the matters and the number of matters that we have, many of the matters that we are investigating and dealing with are dealing with the higher structures, the higher level of management within the judiciary. We've got problems with regional court presidents. we've got problems with chief magistrates. And that's where the problem is. And the higher you go in the system, the more the difficult they make it. Because remember, they're highly influential within their own regions. They have their subordinates who are particularly favorable to them. So they will try every single remedy possible. So I just want to touch on the matter as to whether from the commission, whether the matter was from the Ministry of Justice, whether it was reported to the Ministry of Police. I think it's a very, very valid and a good point that has been raised. Because when the matter came before us as the Ethics Committee, it was clear that members of the South African Police Service had clearly failed a complainant. And we were not simply going to lay supine and allow the system, in the face of the fact that, firstly, the chief magistrate in that area is highly, highly influential. He is able to get to do whatever he wants to do. So that is why when the allegation had been sent off to the Magistrates Commission, he had received wind of it through someone or the other within the commission. And immediately, we as the Ethics Division and Committee were presented with a letter from the Director of Public Prosecutions, Free State, to say, look, I have considered the docket in this particular matter, and I am now going to decline to prosecute. So subsequently, what has transpired in the matter is, after all the efforts that the complainant has made, subsequently a police docket has been opened. The docket was opened, it was subsequently considered by the Director of Public Prosecutions, and a certificate of nolle prosequi was issued. But we didn't accept that because of the history and the pathology of what we understood was taking place in that particular division. So thereafter, we then decided that we must proceed because his conduct clearly falls foul of the regulation, and therefore, whatever the outcome of the criminal matter was, that did not fall within the purview of what we needed to do. So we then particularly proceeded through the entire process. And you'll observe that when it comes to these matters, they will try every single trick in the book to frustrate you. Now, the comment was also made while I was on that point as to what can the members of Parliament who are with us at the Magistrates Commission, how can they be empowered to assist us? The particular challenge that the members of Parliament have is that the process, how it operates, is that when the agenda items are dealt with, 90% of the agenda items are dealt with, but when it comes to misconduct matters, members of Parliament are excused from the deliberations that take place, particularly because we come before you to ask for suspension or removal of office or for the keeping of the remuneration. So therefore, under those circumstances, you will find this particular challenge. But the other challenge that we have, and I'm glad that you've asked us to raise it with you, the other particular challenge we have is, you will know in terms of the regulations of the Act, that the presiding officer has to be a serving magistrate. So the challenge we have in many instances is finding suitable persons who will come and present and preside in matters, and whether they will be released by the head of the officers. We have that, that's always the moment of Regulation 26 investigation is warranted. The Ethics Division has huge difficulties in that we don't have a pool of people. To that extent, we were even, in fact, going to propose at some time or the other, maybe we should start looking to a pool of retired magistrates. Get a pool of people sitting together and let them come and preside in these particular matters. So that is the challenge we have. And the challenge that you say that we perhaps may be a little soft in terms of these postponements that are being granted. Much as it creates an element of discomfort to you, honorable members, it creates extreme discomfort to us. Because these matters are out on our books. We have to report on them all the time. And ultimately, there's always a perception that an element of criticism can be leveled at us. And we want to avoid any element of criticism being leveled at us relating to why matters are taking such a long time. So when it comes to presiding officers and persons leading evidence, The process obviously has to be independent. It's an independent tribunal. And the Magistrates Commission cannot be seen to be prescriptive to the presiding officer as to what should be happening in that particular process. the criticism will be leveled that there's no, the principle of audi ultram partem is not being adhered to. The principles of natural justice are not being adhered to, and that's going to be problematic. So once the matter goes before a properly constituted tribunal, the commission simply cannot interfere in the least. Although perhaps I hear what you are saying, and maybe we should apply our minds to say to the presiding officer that, look, they shouldn't particularly allow matters to be unnecessarily postponed without cogent reasons. I mean, if you give a person one opportunity to get a legal representative, you can't ad infinitum every single time let someone keep on saying, I need to change someone, because these are delaying tactics completely. So I think in respect of the first aspect about whether it's been reported, the conduct of the members of the South African Police Services, perhaps I think what we will do in that respect, we will draft a letter on the part of the Magistrates Commission to our Honourable Minister and raise this particular challenge to him and ask him that we should actually raise it on the other side regarding the conduct of members of the South African Police Services. Perhaps I don't know whether it would be perhaps opportune now that the committee has made the observation, whether it might be better for the committee also to assist us in that regard. Perhaps I would ask for guidance in that regard, where maybe the committee can assist. But I think from the side of the Magistrates Commission, we will do that, and we'll ask you for your assistance as well. Now, in respect of the capacity that Honourable Advocate Mohammed had raised about the capacity of the commission, we are highly constrained currently in terms of the following. We have the ethics division at one stage was properly staffed. We now have two permanent magistrates that are in the ethics division, and we have a third magistrate who's come along to assist us on a weekly basis. So essentially we've got three magistrates who are doing work of the ethics division for a lengthy period of time. The challenge we have in that regard is that to a large extent, if I may say, we are understaffed. We don't have proper resources. The second difficulty we have is that then what essentially happens is, for example, if Mr. Meyer is dealing with a particular matter and a disciplinary inquiry is proceeding at that time, he's got to be then out of the office, work on the road, and proceed at various different courts. So the in terms of capacity, we are challenged in terms of capacity that we don't have sufficient magistrates in the quality assurance at our office in Pretoria to assist us. Now, as regards the Zimanda matter, and I will just go back to the Zimanda matter, so I can tell you that two matters, especially Mr. Zimanda's matter, has been extremely difficult. You would have observed, Honourable Members, that on a regular basis, this particular matter has been reported in the print media. There's been allegations of being involved in rhino poaching, and a whole host, it was a huge article on the front page of the newspaper, sex and bribe scandal, and a whole host of things. And I'd like to just tell you, Honourable Members, that the modus was not where there was a man, it was money, and woman, it was a body. The modus was very, very simple. That even in the instance where it was a female magistrate, monies were demanded. So without, obviously the matter is sub judice, and I don't want to go into the merits of the matter, but to say to you that the evidence will show through the bank statements that monies have been exchanged on a regular basis, on a monthly basis, to the account of the regional court president. But because of him being highly influential, this investigation was extremely difficult, highly sensitive. Many of the witnesses, we had great difficulty in making them come forward. People are afraid of being intimidated. But it's something that we've obviously, because it was so high profile, We've had to get the DPP's office involved. So it was not such a simple, straightforward matter, and I'm glad to say to your honourable members that now that we appear before you, you seem to be much more receptive in trying to bolster and assist us as members of the Commission relating to these particular matters, as opposed to previously comments were made or the perception was created that we as members of the United States Commission were particularly out in a witch hunt and trying to single out various different judicial officers, and we are only here to make sure that we get rid of them from judicial offices. But I want to say to you that ethics and ethical values within the judiciary are very close to our heart, and we're going to do every single thing humanly possible to ensure that we try and clean things up. So when it comes to, for example, Mr. Zimanda's matter, at all material times, and Mr. Mayer will fill you in more particularly relating to the mechanics of it, because when it comes to the day-to-day investigation of matters, I, as the chairperson, to protect my independence in the committee, don't become involved in the investigation, because these matters come before the committee as well. So I think in respect of the case numbers for the attorneys in the Zimande matter, which has also been raised by the Honourable Chair, I think the investigation has come to the point where we are obviously going to obviously report these matters subsequently relating to the conduct of the attorneys, because remember, it always takes two parties in a relationship, which is generally termed as a generally corrupt relationship. And we're not going to allow one party to escape censure. But for now, as I see it, and I may stand to speak on a correction, we obviously require the cooperation of that particular attorney to come and give the evidence. And once that happens, then we obviously, I give you the assurance that the Ethics Committee or the Division will report the matter to the Legal Practice Council regarding the conduct of the attorneys, which needs to be properly dealt with. Because also, the conduct that is expected of members of the organized profession is one of uberema fides. They have to be beyond reproach as well. And if we're going to allow this to happen at that particular level, then the judiciary is going to be completely fall apart. So we're obviously going to deal with that particular matter. I take note of the comments made in respect of Mr. Nayar and the Bosaza matter. In respect of that particular matter, due to the fact that the allegations have been in the public domain, the moment the story broke in the media, immediately thereon, I as the chairperson, I also am the spokesperson for the Magistrates Commission, we immediately as the Ethics Committee dealt with it the following day. We sent out the necessary correspondences, we communicated with the Commission, we requested copies of the affidavit so that we could apply our minds to the allegations that were made before it came to us through the normal. So we were very proactive. Ms. Nayo is a member of the Magistrates Commission, and he's the chairperson of the Legislation Committee. So on his own, he then indicated that whilst this matter is being investigated against him, he'll withdraw from all proceedings of the Commission. So currently I want to give you the comfort that he's not taking part in any of the proceedings. We then authorized a Regulation 26-1 investigation. And to that extent, because he's a chief magistrate, and I think he was chairperson of the Chief Magistrates Forum, and he's involved in many quarters, we were of the view that we'd rather get an outside independent individual to investigate the allegations. To that extent, we asked our current chairperson to assist us, and we have appointed a retired Madam Justice Pretorius as one of the investigators to investigate the allegations. And we have the acting regional court president, or the regional court president, Northwest Province, as the second investigator. So currently that investigation is continuing. Affidavits have been received and obtained. And as I speak to you currently, I'm told that appointments have been set up, meetings have been set up, and we will be able to then give you a briefing shortly relating to this particular matter. Because as I see, the allegations are going to be then put to Mr. Nayar for his response. And based upon his response, the Commission will then take a way forward relating to him. So, essentially, honourable members, if I'd like to say to you the following, that the understanding that we had today was obviously to come in briefly relating to those matters, but I've heard the comments that you have made, and perhaps to that extent, honourable chair, I'd like to perhaps maybe respectfully request an opportunity to perhaps maybe either address you or alternatively maybe formulate a document that we'd like to present to you, setting out the particular challenges that we have and how we can in fact have a good synergy between the portfolio committee and the Magistrates Commission, and where we can ask you for your particular assistance and guidance in relation to some of these matters. So to that extent, I believe that we will not be doing justice to the concerns that you have raised, and give us an opportunity to go back, apply our minds to many of the anomalies that we are faced with on a daily basis, and share it with you, and then we're quite happy to return and to have a fruitful discussion and to deal and deliberate before the committee as well. We'd really appreciate that opportunity, and thank you for that, for raising that aspect, although it is not part of our briefing today. I really am heartened by that invitation. This aspect about paying the salary of magistrates until they are found guilty, I'm going to get Mr. Mayor to deal with some of those aspects, but you know, we always have to give credence to the age-old adage and principle of the Audi Ultram Partem rule here the other side, and every individual is innocent until proven guilty. And much as we have the discomfort about the fiscus being abused, I think one of the things that the Commission can do, perhaps maybe we can implore upon our presenting and presiding officer, that these matters need to be dealt with very, very speedily, and they do not need to be dragged out for a long period of time, and we need to get these matters finalized as soon as possible. So that will then prevent unnecessary delay. So I'm going to hand over to Mr. Mayor and any other aspects, and I'll come in and address you as well.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I don't know where to start. With regard to the vetting, I believe, and Advocate Muslim has helped me out, that the Commission has recently taken the resolution at its last meeting that vetting will take place now. You must remember there are about 2,000 plus magistrates posts, and on a given day there are 300 vacancies, and these are advertised on a yearly basis. Then we get 4,000 or 5,000 applications. And you have shortlisted, or the appointments committee would shortlist, say for instance, 400 or 500 candidates. So those must all be vetted. And we know some of them are prosecutors. So if they are prosecutors, the appointments committee would go to the National Prosecuting Authority and obtain files and do the vetting, but it's a very long process. And the secretary doesn't have the staff to perform all these duties. But I believe that the Commission took such a resolution recently with regard to the candidates. Chair, then with regard to processes followed, the presiding officers we appoint are seasoned and experienced magistrates and regional magistrates. And the problem is we don't want to overburden them with various misconduct inquiries. But they do their best and level best to administer justice also relating to a request for postponement. Some of these postponements are vigorously opposed by the Commission. But it's a decision taken by the presiding officer, and they are well aware that we need to, especially when a magistrate has been provisionally suspended from office, that we need to conclude these misconduct inquiries against them as soon as possible. But you have a process to be followed. I must say it must also pass constitutional muster if they take it to the High Court or to the Constitutional Court. They did, and they do sometimes, because
we don't want to be seen to have a procedural flaw, and then the particular magistrate is charged with serious misconduct, is or the process is found to be not according to law, or not according to the procedures followed, and not according to justice. So that's where the problem comes in with postponing matters. But it's for the deciding officer to decide. But as persons reading the evidence, we really do our level best to, and they are aware of it, that they should conclude these matters as soon as possible. If you have the problem of counsel, senior counsel, not being available, or the deciding officer, maybe a regional magistrate, he has a court role for those days, so you have to set dates in advance, anyway. With regard to, maybe I should go to the various questions in regard to Mr. Nzimande. I must say, one of the complainants who was appointed on his behalf, on his request, in an acting position, she was an attorney. But there was also a problem with her. There were criminal charges against her as well, when she was still acting as an attorney. And when she was not appointed on contract, she filed a complaint. Immediately after her contract was terminated, because she didn't want to follow and be of assistance to the regional court president any longer. So she then filed a complaint with the commission and requested an affidavit. And based on the affidavit, the commission requested a preliminary investigation to be conducted. Some of the attorneys have been indeed been permanently appointed by the minister on a recommendation of the commission. So it's very difficult. Now you have to charge those magistrates, but we don't want to prejudice the case against Mr. Nzimande. So it's very tricky and it's sensitive. But the police is busy with that investigation, and we're still doing an investigation ourselves as well. And it's, like I said, it is believed that that arrest will be made shortly. With regard to the matter has been reported to the SRS, to the South African Police Force, and we have high profile members of the police who are dealing with this investigation. I know there's a general and there's a brigadier involved, but it is quite sensitive as well. But so they're keeping us up to speed with regard to the investigation, and they're also in liaison with the National Director of Public Prosecutions. Fortunately, we have now Ms. Patoy, and she adhered to our request also to give one of the investigating or senior advocates who is also involved in the investigation, criminal investigation and the litigation, to assist the commission in presenting the evidence on behalf of the commission at the misconduct inquiry. Chairperson, yes. With regard to Mr. Nzimande's motives.
So are you saying it is not necessary for us that we must contact the national director? She has already processed that issue.
Yes, with regard to the assistance of the person giving the evidence, yes. That's fine, but with regard to, maybe we should go to the Hinka matter. One must remind ourselves that the complainant, she filed this, well, the incident happened in 2010 and the subsequent one in 2011. And she reported the matter to the police. It's Bloemfontein Botshabelo, where Mr. Hinka has been the chief magistrate, and like my colleague said, as the good minister said, that he's highly influential and he is very well connected.
So what happened is, she only in 2016 could report reported the matter at last as a last resort to the minister. Then the minister referred the matter to the department and it came to the commission. Now, an affidavit, it's not an affidavit, it was a letter, and then we requested an affidavit. Then we had an affidavit, yes, it's committed itself to conduct a preliminary investigation. It took some time, and the preliminary investigation was conducted, and based on the preliminary investigation report, we wrote to Sean Abrams, the MEPP at the stage, and requested him to reconsider the DPP's decision not to prosecute. And we gave him a copy of the preliminary investigation report, on which basis we charged him with misconduct. And Sean Abrams decided to confirm the decision of the DPP and not to prosecute. But despite of that, the commission proceeded, and we are busy with the investigation. I must say, we still have a problem with police officers and members of the SAPS who are threatening the complainant. It is on record also in the disciplinary inquiry. Some of them testified. But we are in close liaison with the complainant, and she is about to testify. Well, she has already testified, she's to be prosecuted now. But you need assistance. But you will note it's very sensitive. I mean, his defense was, although he said he's not giving us any defense. He pleads not guilty, or he places everything in dispute. But when this affidavit from the complainant. He knew about it already. So he was aware of it before it was even reported to the minister. Then what he would do is, as soon as the commission reacted on the affidavits and asked his comments, he said, but the complainant withdrew the matter. Here's a withdrawal statement. And he produced that withdrawal statement to the secretary of the commission. And the secretary was at the view, the then secretary was at the view that no, we should not proceed with any inquiry in regard. The complainant is innocent and whatever. But the ethics division promoted the matter to the ethics committee, and a preliminary investigation was conducted, and based on the preliminary investigation report and all the recommendations made in the commission, well, the ethics committee recommended that he be charged, and the commission charged him with misconduct. And it's not rape. We don't charge him with rape. That's a criminal investigation, you know. So it's that he misconducted himself, like the charges which were put in the charge sheet, which Advocate Mr. read to you. Now he also took us to the High Court, the decision to charge him with misconduct on an urgent application. I think Advocate Musa also alluded to that. And what he raised as an argument was that the matter was withdrawn. There was a withdrawal statement. Now, halfway in the disciplinary inquiry, he raised a point and said he had an alibi. He was not at Bloemfontein at the alleged incident, at the time of the incident when the incident occurred. So he had an alibi. Now, so when he raised this as an alibi, as a possible defense, now we have to investigate whether he was indeed in the Eastern Cape, as he alleged. And this takes time, because you want to rebut whatever he says in that regard. But anyway, we are making progress. Most of the evidence has been placed on record, and it's now the complainant who has to be cross-examined, and thereafter it's up to Mr. Hinko and his legal team to put their defense, if there's anything. But that is the problem we have, and you know, to it, I would say she it's a woman, she's 43 years of age. She's not very well, she's very sober, and she's coming from the local community. She cannot speak English, so we have to work through an interpreter. I must say three of possible witnesses have already passed away, which makes it very suspicious. We're not sure. We've tried to investigate that, but it's still very curious and that suspicious. Anyway, that's Mr. Nzimandi, Mr. Hinka. With regard to Ms. Freeman, I don't know whether like I said, she was appointed a magistrate a long time ago, and then she applied to be a senior magistrate. And when she applied to be a senior magistrate, she didn't disclose that she had a previous conviction and that she was a director of a company, etc., etc. So only then, when she didn't disclose that and he charged her for other things, for the claims, then the commission, or there was a preliminary investigation, and in the preliminary investigation, before her being charged, it came to light that she was convicted of theft previously and that she didn't disclose it. So that was added as an extra charge. And the fact that she did not disclose the directorship of a company without the commission's permission and the minister's approval, that was also found to be it's an act of dishonesty. And she's been found guilty, and like I said, and we're just waiting for the sanction to be imposed. So I believe that if the sanction is to be removed from office, then a recommendation will be made by the presiding officer to the commission, and the commission will then advise the minister and take a report in parliament. And then we will be able to determine whether or not to withhold her remuneration, pending parliament's resolution whether or not to restore it to office. Chairperson, with the Van Schalkwyk matter, I know it's very long, and I've been involved in this matter from the beginning, from its commencement. It's you know, if your attorney passes away, then the presiding officer will take that into account and say, listen, yeah, of course, we can't proceed. But this is the third time that she fires or terminates services of attorneys. I mean, she's taken us to the High Court already on the basis that of invalidity of the regulations and the code of conduct, the very same regulations which provided her to be appointed as a magistrate and to become a chief magistrate. So, and the Constitutional Court already in the Van Rooyen judgment in 2003, if I'm not mistaken, ruled that the Act and the regulations and the Code of Conduct as it is, which has been amended after the Constitutional Court judgment, is a past constitutional muster. So the Act has been amended, the regulations has been amended, but not in a sense that the minister is not allowed to impose sanctions. Now it's for the presiding officer and then for the commission and to confirm and proceed. But nevertheless, that took us almost five years before we could commence with the disciplinary inquiry. And it's on its way now. But now she's representing herself, and she's cross-examining the first witness book. And this is the second, it's the second week now. It's been set down for another week. And she could be day on end. But the presiding officer will, at a certain stage, but listen, you're repeating yourself or whatever, but it's for the person giving the evidence to make an objection and say, well, this has been done, and I believe she will do that. So we're just waiting for the outcome of, we'll have to see what is happening now at the next postponement date and the week following thereafter. Hopefully we will, because 9 witnesses are still to testify on behalf of the commission. And they were ready. We all ready. They were piled up and lined up, and some of them are magistrates. So, you know, court rules are affected, etc., etc. But Chairperson, like I said, we're doing our level best to have these matters concluded as soon as possible. And we'll speak to the presiding officers as well. But I know. We even, in fact, when a magistrate has been, is to be charged with a criminal offence, previously we entered into a commerce, we had a relationship with the DPPs, or the DPPs at a certain, and with the NDPP, the former NDPP, to have those matters dealt with speedily, the criminal matters against magistrates, so that we can continue with our disciplinary inquiries. We don't wait for the criminal matter to be concluded before we commence with our disciplinary inquiry. It's a separate process, and unless there's a court order determining that we should not proceed, we will proceed with the disciplinary inquiries and be charged them accordingly. I don't know, Miss. Chairperson, maybe with regard to the lack of staff at the commission. I've been doing this now since 1994, 1996. I was appointed the secretary of the commission. Thereafter, since 2000, I've only dealing with all complaints against all magistrates countrywide. And I must say there's a lot, but some of them are frivolous. So we just we let them know we can't engage into matters where it is about the judicial functions of courts, but most of the matters are also dealt with by on cluster head, the chief magistrates. We request that you should deal with the matter at your level. The commission is not involved in this regard, but the serious matters we deal with, and from the instance we had. We had 5 magistrates appointed. We even seconded on a 3-year basis some magistrates, also to provide for transformation. But they all left. They apply for better posts, or they resign, and are reappointed either on a senior level or maybe as judges or regional magistrates. So we really have to fix. The problem is, most magistrates, they don't want to do this kind of work. It's very what is the word? It takes a lot of courage and a lot of time. It's time consuming. I'm very, very, very busy. But if they do apply for better posts, then we sit. And the problem also is that the posts are of these at our posts. The vacant posts are advertised on a level of magistrate and not senior magistrate. So you don't invite people or attracting people from the senior level. But anyway, I think that's a matter that the commission should decide on, and I believe they're busy with it. So Chair, all in all, we are understaffed, but we're doing our level best. Like Mr. Advocate Nusser said, we are 3. It's actually Ms. Stichling is on a temporary basis, and my colleague is 67 already, so he's going to retire soon. So that will leave me on my own. No, so we need assistance, and we do. And I compile these reports in conjunction with the Ethics Committee, Yeah, but rest assured, we're doing our level best to have these matters dealt with as soon as possible and concluded. I don't want to report to Parliament on a 3-monthly basis and say, listen, this matter's not been finalised as yet. But we've dealt with a lot of cases already, fortunately. And I must say, the chief magistrates who were used to even sit on members of the commission, I used to advise them and recommend to them certain procedures to follow. But now they were standing behind the door. And now they're going to be, well, they are charged now. And that's very disappointing. Chair, I don't know whether I should proceed with any other queries. I'm not sure whether we've covered everything. Maybe not all the questions, but I don't know what. I'm in your hands.
No, I think we will await this document that Advocate Musa promised so that we can interact with some of these matters more. And because it is our view that the magistrate is at the core phase of dealing with our, the first interaction that our people have with the judiciary. So if there will be allegations of this nature, it is going to tarnish the image of our justice system. And we can't allow it. So we are, as a committee, we are getting ourselves to work with anyone who wants to lend a hand in ensuring that we have a system that is free of all of these challenges. And that is why we promise that we will also try and interact with our minister so that the issue of the police is also attended to. So we will I mean, we know that you will be reporting on a continuous basis to us, but we will, every time you appear, we will try to be of help, but to be robust. But we're not only just going to be asking questions, but precisely what other members have really said, that give us certain areas where you think improvement is required so that we can also apply ourselves to the solutions that are needed. So thank you very much for the information, and we hope to see you very soon with the documents. That's a report for this goes there. It's not like, I don't know how it was done in this parliament to say, well, I know this is here in the next quarter. This is where we want to take the turning point or how things are going to be. That's what we have to do. Okay, thank you.
I think, okay, we agree that they will bring the report in the next meeting. But also one thing that I would request is that I'm not sure if maybe it was the procedure that was used before that we only have the committee, the ethics members that are coming to report to us. If maybe it is a procedure, I don't have a problem. But I would, if it's not a procedure, I would request that next time when they come, because it is not, remember there was also the issue of remuneration which Mr. Musa said it does not belong to him. There are other committees. There's a committee that is dealing with it. Yes. So maybe if we can also get some representatives from all those that maybe are relevant to also answer those questions. Thank you, Chair.
Can we discuss that matter as a committee? Because they are responding to what we have asked them to come and present. Maybe we might need to discuss the Magistrates Commission, but I think let's discuss it first as the committee. Thank you very much, Drive Fly Safe, and team, we meet again for the next report. Thank you very much, Honorable Member, for taking us again.